a really beautiful piece, very, very profound. And actually, as it so happens, I mean, I think there's no coincidences in life, but I really believe that there's no coincidences in learning. So earlier today, I was reviewing a piece that I first saw on Shabbos from the Torah of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And a very basic thrust of that beautiful, beautiful piece I then saw in this piece by Rav Asher. So I'm happy to give you the Lubavitcher stuff another time as well if you want. But this is a long piece. We'll do all the highlights. But it's really quite beautiful and insightful piece. So if you have it, Amud Dalid, the beginning of Maamar Bet. He starts off with a Medrash, in Bereishis Rabba, a very famous Medrash, commenting on a Pasuk, of course, in the beginning of the creation story, V'choshech al pnei tahom. So the Medrash famously says that the Choshech here is a metaphor for Yavon. Zeh galos Yavon, shechshicha einehem shal Yisrael be Yisrael. Very, very famous medrash that Choshech is symbolizing Golos of Greece, of Yavon, because they tried to blacken our eyes, so to speak, or blind us to the beauty of Torah. And more dramatically, they required the Jewish people to write on the horn of an ox, Ein lechem chelek be'elokei Yisrael. You have no chelek, no connection to the God of the Jewish people. But that's a very famous medrash, and obviously very intriguing. You know, it's obvious that there must be something really deep here, and so many Baalei Machshava over the centuries have offered various theories as to the message of this particular medrash. So what does Rav Asher Weiss do with it? So he points out that I actually did not translate it 100% correctly, because I said, write this statement on the horn of Ashur. But Rav Asher Weiss points out in the first sentence, Kisvu lechem al keren hashor. The Medrash is more precise. It uses the hey hayadia, not just Ashur, but the shore, as if there's some specific shore. And he asks the question, you know, obviously, al eze shore medubar, what are we talking about here? What's so special about any particular shore? Why dafka ashore? The message, if you're an enemy of the Jewish people, you know, getting your enemy to, you know, to deny their own identity, that's, that's a flex. You know, that's serious psychological warfare. Like, I get that. But why on a Karen Hashor? Right, that's Rav Asher Weiss's question. And this is the part where he totally dovetails with what I saw earlier today from the Rebbe. He says, you have to understand the essence of the battle between Greece and the Jewish people, between Yavon and Israel. Nikar la'ayin kol sheshona hi milchemes Yavon keneg Yisrael mi milchemes hamachiyos ha'acheros. Right, there's something quite unique about the battle that we had with Greece in the Hanukkah story compared to all the other, and unfortunately there is a long list of enemies that we've had throughout history. Machos Bavol, Machos Romi, Yatzu Kenegin Mitziutam Shel Yisrael Ka'am. They tried to destroy us as a nation. Hichrivos Beis HaMikdash, Higlos HaMeyartzam, right? They destroyed our greatest, you know, building, if you will, the Beis HaMikdash. They kicked us out of the land. All things you would want to do if you're trying to destroy and vanquish a nation. However, lo kein hayevanim, heim hishiru es Yisrael ad masam, af hirshu lehem lasos kechafeitzam, b'chol tchumei chayim, she'enem kshurim adas Yisrael. They didn't try to kill us. They didn't try to exile us. They just had certain rules of religious persecution. So what's the upshot? What do we see from this? And here's, I think, the first critical statement that Rav Asher Weiss makes on his own. Shorash Hadavar. What's the essence of it all? Shebnei Yavon lo keneged am Yisrael nilchamu. It's a mistake to say that the Greeks saw the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, as an enemy. They weren't at war with us. Kiim keneged yichudo shel am Yisrael. This was a battle not against the Jewish nation, but against the notion of a chosen nation that has any kind of special or unique relationship with Hashem. Keneged Yichudo Shel Am Yisrael, Keneged Mashi Yisrael Omrim, Ata V'chartanu Mikol Ha'amim. Where do we see this? So he gives some very, very interesting proof text to develop this idea. Maybe some of you have heard about the next point. It's really quite remarkable and it fits in beautifully with his thesis. In the Mishnah, in Maseches Midos, it tells us that there were Shalosha Esrei Pirtzot Pirtzu HaYivanim BeHeichal. Right? We sing about the Heichal, the Pirtzot. So the Mishnah there says actually that they made 13 spots where they made a crack in the Heichal. But the Mishnah adds, Lo B'choma U'Bedelet, not in more obvious places that you could have wanted to break the Heichal of the Mikdash, but rather specifically in something called the Soreg. The Soreg. Samach Vav Reish Gimel. You see that on the bottom of the page. The Soreg. The Gra, as well as the Tosos Yontef, explain Shadavka B'Soreg Pirtzu. Because what was the Soreg? The Soreg was a boundary that separated, until that point, even non-Jews are allowed in the Beis Mikdash. Right? Ki beisi beis tefillah yikrei l'chol ha'amim. They can bring karbanos, certain kinds. They can even come to the beis hamikdash, but only up to a point. And the Soreg demarcates that. And sure enough, already the Vilna Gaon and the Tosfos Yom Tov point out that that's dafka where the Yevanim made their pirtzot. Because that is, you know, quite literally a physical manifestation and expression of the difference between the Jewish people and the non-Jewish world, and the special relationship that, which the Jewish people has, that only they can go further. Hasoreg hayagvul she'oto asur haya legoy la'avor, on the next page, olit karev yoter el hakadosh pnima. They could not go that far. They could only go to the pnima, to the soreg, excuse me, but not any further. Ba'as harat mavet, husharu hagoyim shel la'avor es hasoreg. It was actually a capital offense, death penalty, if they would go one step further. Nimsa imkain. So what do you see from here? Shepirtzos hasoreg ba levate tem lechama beyot Yisrael am segula. So it's not that much of a jump to say for Rav Asher Weiss that because of what the soreg represented, it's not a coincidence that the Yevanim attacked that place particularly. If somebody random was coming to ransack the Beis Hamikdash just to damage for damage's sake, there's no way you would have picked that. It's insignificant. But if you understand what it symbolizes, so it says Rav Asher Weiss, it's not a coincidence. This exactly expressed what they were trying to vanquish, what they were fighting for, or against, I guess, depending on your perspective. That is to say, they were coming to fight against Yisrael being the Am Segula, Am She'oto Bachar Hashem. They, by breaking that down, they were demonstrating their rejection of this idea that there's any difference. It can't be this place where you could go that we can't go. That's, other people have said that, is already implied already in the Grunt as Yontif, but then Rav Asher Weiss adds another thing, which is, I don't know if it's as persuasive, it's almost kind of cute, but I have to say, not only did I see it in this piece, recently I was listening to a Devar Torah that he posted on an audio recording, and he made the same point there. This is one of his favorite little, in Yiddish you would say a knitch. It's a little bit of a, he adds a little bit of a twist, which again, I think is cute, but it's certainly worth seeing, because it's certainly nice. And he points out, if it's not a coincidence that they broke the Soreg, it's also not a coincidence that how many pirtzot did they make? 13. Why 13? So says Rav Asher Weiss, Kineged Yud Gimel Ikarim Hamiyachadim et Emunah Yisrael. Etana Yisrael Ata V'chartanu, the idea of Havdalas Yisrael Min Ha'amim Nisu HaYevanim Lefrotz Avata. 13, Kineged, the 13 principles of faith. Now, obviously, it's a little anachronistic, needless to say, they were not formulated as principles of faith until many centuries later, but you know, if you assume, which I certainly do, that the Rambam didn't make these 13 things up, that they, you know, he might have, you know, crystallized them, he systematized them, he put philosophical, you know, rigor behind them. But at the end of the day, they're all ideas that had predated him from Chazal. So, again, it's a knach. I'm not as persuaded by this, but it's certainly a cute twist. You know, that the 13 are dafka attacking our 13 principles of faith, and that certainly, if it's true, would certainly, you know, even reinforce the point. But I think his point stands, and it's a very beautiful and persuasive point, just the very fact that of all things, they were attacking this this Soreg. And now he goes back to the thing we started with, which is the most inexplicable, it seems, which is this idea of the Keren HaShor. Why write anything on a horn, and why on a shore, Dafka? Remember, that was the question. So he says in the next paragraph, Ubeze navin mahu HaShor HaMesuyam. Shalom Amru HaYevanim. Why Dafka the shore? Why is it HaShor with the Hey idea? What's the shore? So he quotes an incredible medrash from Vayikra Rabbah. And the medrash says as follows, that whenever we see psukim listing different animals for karbanos, like if you look at the bottom of the medrash, the last line, shore, o kesev, o eis, right? Shore is always the first one mentioned. So now go back to the top of the medrash, second line. Why is it, the medrash asks, that the shore is Rosh L'Kol Karbanot? So the Medrash explains this by use of a beautiful mashal, which I'll paraphrase for the sake of time. And he speaks about the fact that there was a certain matrona, like a fancy lady within the king's court, who accused one of the gedolei malchus, one of the big, you know, high-level assistants or, you know, ministers to the king, accused him of doing something not nice. The Medrash is not so explicit, but certainly sounds like a Potiphar Yosef kind of thing. But unlike Potiphar, who just reflexively trusted his wife and threw Yosef in the pit, so the Medrash says that the king investigated Badak HaMelech, and he found the Ein Behem Mamish. He found that there was no truth to it. So what did the king do? after all, now his minister, his trusted advisor, has been verschmutzt. Right? There's a dark cloud hanging over his head. You know, there was a very famous case from my childhood when there was a certain, I'm not sure if he was something high up in the government. I can't remember if he was a cabinet official or not. I think if I remember correctly, I think it might have been in the Reagan administration. Anyway, somebody was totally, verschmutzt and accused of something. He was claiming he was innocent the whole time. And then he actually went to trial. And I can't remember exactly how long, but like the jury came back like in lightning speed with a unanimously innocent, verdict. So in that sense, he was free, right? But in one of the most famous, iconic events in recent American political history, he gave a press conference on the steps of the federal courthouse in Washington, and he had this memorable line. I mean, if you Google it, it's like in the line of great quotes. He says, "Where do I go to get my reputation back?" Which is the modern incarnation of the famous mushal, of Lashon Hara with the feathers, right? He might have won in court, but there's somebody out there who heard this rumor who's never going to believe that he was quite innocent. So the king is worried about his minister, right? This woman verschmutzt him, said all sorts of bad things. He knows it's true. So what does the Medrash say? The king, what did he do? He went out of his way to make a su'uda chashuva. He made this big su'uda, with his minister who had previously been on the outs under a dark cloud of suspicion, and now he's the guest of honor, he has the best seat, right? It's a very dramatic way of saying, I stand with this guy, it's totally honest, it's totally true. Kach umos olam, he says. Mon lehem Yisrael uv omrim lehem asisa asa egel. So, what's the nimshol? Now, this you have to listen carefully because you'll catch it in a second, that there's going to be something clearly off with this medrash, which is what Rav Asher Weiss is then going to attack and explain. The medrash says, just like that metaphor, so too the goyim attack the Jewish people, like this matron accused the minister. And they say, you see, you have no fidelity to the king, you made an ego. So look what the next line of the medrash is. Ubadak HaKadosh Baruch Hu hadvarim, avlo motza behem mamish. So the king investigated, and he found that it wasn't true. Lafichach nasa shor rosh l'kar karbonos, hadoch desiv shor kesev os eis. So in order to show you, see, the Jewish people are innocent, they didn't do that bad thing with the shor, that's why Hashem doesn't just have the shor as one of the animals as a karbon, it's the first one mentioned as a dramatic endorsement, nothing bad happened. Okay, now what's the obvious? It's a beautiful medrash, great mushel, a little action, a little excitement. The Jewish people end up on top. It's got all the ingredients of a great medrash. What's the one obvious problem? It's not true. They made the egel. So, there are many ways in which we could not imagine something that Rav Asher Weiss would have asked or said. But here we were all mechaven to Rav Asher Weiss. So you didn't have to be Rav Asher Weiss to ask this question. This is an obvious problem. And of course, he asked the question in the next paragraph. What is going on? What is the medrash talking about? So you see where it's on the last paragraph of Amud Hey, where it's underlined. So this is Rav Asher Weiss's answer. Ella, what's going on here? We have to understand it with a little bit more panemius, a little more depth. Umos olam monin es yisrov ormim lehen. Ein avod aschem es ha'elokim shoneh halila me'avod azar shalonu. Says Rav Asher Weiss, this is so brilliant and so profound. This I wouldn't have thought on my own, for the record. Maybe you guys, not me. They weren't accusing the Jewish people of doing the egel. We didn't need them to do that. You don't need investigative journalists. This is not Woodward and Bernstein, journalism here. Oh, we uncovered a scandal. You did the egel. We all know that. It's not a secret. That wasn't their accusation. The accusation was, listen carefully, by the dint of the fact, given that you did make and worship an egel, that shows that your whole approach to Avodah Hashem is no different than our approach to Avodah Zarah. How so? Pam ovrim atem es elokim. Upam ovrim es leegel. Sometimes you worship God. Sometimes you worship a golden calf. But there's no difference, evidently. Kamonu, just like us, you're mitoch tzorech nafshi. Lepulchan atem ovdim es elokechem. V'lo mitoch bechir shabachar bachem ubekarbonoseichem. You basically have a psychological need to worship something. Many people have had it over history, right? That's the famous accusation, right, by Marx, right? Religion, the opium of the masses, makes you feel better, and you didn't just need to worship something, having a physical manifestation, having an idol or something. So some generations you're in the mood to worship the invisible thing you call God. Other times you're no different than us. Even when you're worshiping not the egel, but the God. But basically you have that just same psychological need. It's not that there's actually anything true. You have no truth claim. You don't even necessarily believe it yourself. You're the same as us. It's a crutch. In one generation, this will work. In another generation, that will work. So on that accusation, that's completely different than what we thought. Right? That's a completely different type of accusation. So on that, says Rav Asher Weiss, top of page Vav, Badak HaMelech B'dvarim U'matz Hashem Ben Mamash. So what did the Medrash say? That the Melech, meaning Hashem, investigated. It's not true. That is to say, Avodas HaKarbonos She'ovdim Yisrael Hashem Nekiyahi U'tahora V'ein Hi Murevet Chalila Im Yetzer Avodas HaEgel. In other words, whatever the sin was for the Egel, and why the Jewish people fell prone to that, Ayin, many different Perushim. Parshas Ki Tisa, not now. Rav Asher Weiss himself, he doesn't get into it now either. Of course we're not defending that, and we're still not whitewashing it and pretending it didn't happen. But what Hashem was testifying to the fact is, that was a one-off. That was a mistake. It's a big machlokas in the Rishonim. Was it Avodah Zorah? Was it something else? It's not the machlokas in the Mefarshim. What was the sin that they did? But whatever it was, it's not a fundamental flaw. Again, it'll haunt them for history. But it doesn't negate all the actually genuine avodah that they do with an actual egel. When they're bringing karbonos, it's not because, oh yeah, it's just we need something to do to make us feel good. And we're no different than the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. We're just a pagan in a different form. No, no, that was a mistake. They're human, they made a catastrophic mistake, catastrophic. But Hashem says, I can testify with the Jewish people, when they go to the Beis HaMikdash and they're doing their avodah karbonot, that's not that. That's because I gave them a command, they have a relationship with me, and that's totally sincere and spiritual. Look at the end of the paragraph. Nimsa imkein shedavka hakrabos ashor, and that's why the Medrash was telling us that why in the psukim shor always comes first, rosh l'kol karbonos, because that shor, the ox, expresses as avodas Yisrael l'Hashem k'am hanifchar. Hashem bachar otanu l'chelko v'nachlato bachar banu l'avodaso. Hashem places that first, the very thing that they had made into an idol, or whatever you want to call the chereigel, by putting that, not only allowing that to be a carbon ashore, but making that first, with Hashem saying, I know that when you bring shvarim, when you bring carbonos, it's got nothing to do with that. That's a mistake, but you owned up for that, we'll deal with that, but it doesn't disqualify what you're doing now. That's a very, I think, spellbindingly brilliant explanation of that Medrash. So now we're not at Hanukkah yet. That's just the Medrash. Okay? So now he says, second paragraph. Shor zesh also kadosh boch rosh l'karbonos. Shehu zesh shehira she'ein mamish mashemoni ha'umos es am Yisrael al masa ego. The fact that Hashem did this idea of making the shor the first karbon and saying that the Goyim's accusation against us doesn't really hold water. Davka al karno. So the Goyim, the generation of the Greeks, of the Yevanim, they were trying to attack that. And we want you to express your lack of loyalty to God on none other than a shore. And not just any shore, ha-shore, it's hearkening back to this whole, so to speak, conversation between Hashem and the Goyim. That shore which you think you've used to escape from the, you know, the dark cloud of the Egel. You think you've eclipsed that and you've shown that you genuinely have a relationship with Hashem, and the fact that you can even bring karbonos from ashore and it's rosh l'kol karbonos, davka on that animal, Yevanim said. I want you to write, no, we actually have no relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Omer Yevanim, im chafetzim atem lakriv karbonos, and this is so powerful, and this is the part that is somewhat similar to the thesis I had mentioned before from the Rebbe, that the Greeks were not about to, in many cases, although we'll see three in a second where they want us to stop practicing certain religion. But here, when it came to karbonos, that wasn't one of the xeros. They didn't say get rid of the sacrificial service. Says Rav Asher Weiss, the Goyim said, you want to bring karbonos? Gesinte hate. Im lepulchan tzrichim atem? Adarav likrivu. You have your psychological need, your insecurity, your existential angst, which can be, you know, taken care of by bringing animals and burning them, you know, like some wackos in a forest, you know? You want to do that? You know, it's not sophisticated like our Greek philosophy and mathematics, but okay, you need it. Beseder, you could do it. But if you're going to do it, said the Greeks, achal karbanchem kitvu en lanu chelek b'lokei Yisrael. Only if you do the following. If you write that down, because by doing that, hoda b'zeh, she'en etam yuchodem u'muvdolem min ha'amim, because that's your expression of saying, this is a secular thing, this is a pagan thing, it's like a psychological thing, but it's not genuine MS, it's not genuine relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not genuinely spirituality. En evor aschem le'elukim shona, come on, admit it, you're no different than us. You know, we bow down to this, you bow down to that, what's the difference? Me'evor ashar amim, ish le'elukav chalila. That was what they were trying to do. So if you take a look, continuing out toward the next paragraph, And that's why they dafka picked the egel to do that. So you see where it's underlined in the next paragraph? Lo bo ha'yivanim levata la'sakrava. They didn't come to say no more karbonos. Much worse than that. You want chefet sam. What do they want to do? Excuse me? La'afkiyat avor ha'alokim mitchum ha'kodesh. Ha'niskav u'hafchak l'ki'ur elili lo la'krava ha'shashem bachar ba sheyesh ba'dveikus v'kirvas ha'alokim kim sarach nafshi shel am lakriv. Right? Maybe in some way it would have been better from their perspective if we had become totally atheist and paganistic. I don't know. But their strategy with us was not to tell us you can't do anything, but rather to be mechalel the Kodesh. Not to prevent the Kodesh, but to be mechalel the Kodesh. You want to do, you want to play in the corner over there? You want to be like little kids playing tea? You know, you want to play, you want to pretend? You know, oh, that's fine, you know. We'll let you have your fun. As long as you admit that you're no different than us. It's just a psychological, you know, projection, a secular kind of a thing. So turn over to the next page. This will be, well, hopefully we can get to the bottom of this page, and we'll stop at this. But this is a great, great page. Shoresh Amud Zayin. Shoresh Milchemes Yavam BeYisrael Hu Imkain. What bottom line? Underlined headline. What's the bottom line? Milchama BeYichudam BeChiratam BeKibudushasam Shal Yisrael. In the end, it was about their fight against our uniqueness, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the truth of our selection in our relationship with Hashem. So if that's what they were trying to do with the Kitvu al Karen Hashor, so now he has to answer, well, how come there were three things according to Chazal that the Greeks didn't want us to do at all? Is it a coincidence that out of 613 things that they picked the three? So that's what he addresses in the next paragraph, very beautifully. Gozer ha-yevanim ala chodesh, ala Shabbos, ala Mila. No Rosh Chodesh, no Shabbos, no Mila. Why those three? Mitzvah Kiddush HaChodesh, Himash HaBachar Hashem BiYisrael, Lekvo Et Zmanei HaMoadim U'Lekadsham. Because Kiddush HaChodesh is the key to the entire Jewish calendar, and the very fact that it's not an automatic calendar. We sanctify Kiddush. We sanctify the new months. No other nation can do that. We totally determine the calendar. That is an expression of the unique relationship the Jewish people have, not only with time, but with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moreover, in the fourth line, Lorakat Moadim Nimsar B'Yad Yisrael. It's not only that we can determine the holidays, we can create Kiddusha. Right? Depending on when we make Rosh Chodesh, that'll determine if Yom Kippur is today or tomorrow. Right? Well, is it? Which one is it? The answer is whatever we decide. Like, that is an awesome power. But it's not just Yom Tovim. Also Shabbos, he says. Also, it can impact nature. Fine, we'll skip that for a second. Go down to the two more lines where it's underlined. Right, Shabbos is the paradigm of Havdalah. That there's a time that's Kodesh and Chol. There are places that are Kodesh and Chol, and there are people that are Kodesh and Chol. Right, that's, we summarize all that in what famous recitation every week? Havdalah, right? That's the last paragraph of Havdalah. Ma'avdil, bain, 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 bain. So that is, but the shorish of all that, the paradigm of all that was Shabbos. Akein nochrisha Shabbos chayiv misa. And that's why, by the way, one of the things that a goy is not allowed to do. Okay, he wants to wear tzitzis because not to hate. He wants to put on tefillin. Okay, you know, a little weird, but okay. You know, I wish all these Shiva high school kids wanted to put on tefillin as much as that guy over there. Okay, fine. But so Shabbos chayiv misa. Why? Because Shabbos is the matana tova. That's what separates us from them. And lastly, mitzvahs mila, obviously, os bris kodeshi, bein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ulabanav chavivav, bris damim, hima vates, es b'chiz Yisrael. There, of course, you have the dramatic, physical, you know, bonded in blood, literally showing us the Jewish people are different. Zuhi hasiba, shemishenichnusu hayivanum lehechel, and this is so great, and this exact point, this paragraph, this is the point that the Rebbe specifically was focusing on in the piece that I was reading. I never thought about this, I have to be honest, until this year. How come the Yevanim, if they were trying to ruin the base of Mikdash, why did they spill out all the oil? It says, Timu Kalashman. And I have to be honest, probably when I was a kid, if I thought about it at all, I kind of assumed it happened by accident. Like they were just rummaging around and everything they touched, they made tummy. But the Rebbe assumed in his piece, and Rav Asher Weiss is certainly assuming that it was deliberate. But if it's deliberate, then the question is, why did they spill it out? Why did they break all the jars? Why did they even tummy them? So it fits so perfectly now. Beautiful. Look at this. They didn't spill it out. Kim Timum. Why? Because they weren't coming to say, don't practice your religion. You can't do the menorah. Kim es kedusha sa vitara sa. No, you want to do it, it's fine. But it'll be profane. It'll be tamei. Aram, amro yevonim. Kazetei, tidlikwas menorah. Light away. Bless your heart. Ach de ulachem. But as long as you know, Ain atem kedoshim umuvd olam. Ain't nothing special. You think your oil is so holy? We're metamit. You want to now light the tami oil? That's fine. That's no different than anyone lighting a candle in their house. B'shem and tami hidliku es hamenorah. And last but not least, we'll finish with this. Hachronim makshim matzora chaya b'neis pacha shemen. Right? Very famous question. Right? Their whole life were taught you needed this miracle. So you get a little older, you learn. There's a halacha. Tomahutra b'tzibur. There's circumstances when you're allowed to use tamei oil in the Beis HaMikdash, and this would have been one of them according to the Achronim. So why did they not just light it? Okay, so the Yevonim didn't go to Yeshiva, they don't know how the Achronim and the Pilpulim, but we know it, and why would Hashem give us a miracle? We didn't need it. That's a famous question. So he explains beautiful. Based on what we're saying, Kavanas HaYevonim, we're Dafka, we want you to use tamei oil. Now maybe, says Rav Shweiss, maybe technically it would have been okay to use the tamei oil. But that would have violated the whole spirit of the rebellion. They were trying to get us to use tamei oil. The fact that technically it's allowed, in any normal circumstance we could rely on that. But Dafka then, the crescendo, the crowning moment of our rebellion against them, we made a religious war to say, no, we're not going to do bidyevid. We're not going to have a secular religion, a psychological insecurity, but rather a special, unique kedusha that we believe in is totally true. In that case, they had to, Dafka, use only pure oil. The goyim Dafka wanted us to use the impure stuff. But rather, that's what we did instead. We don't want to rely on that because we understood that that would be, by using only the highest levels, that showed that highest level relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.